Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Elkanen.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I'm bidding a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day. Good morning, everybody. Happy Friday. TGIF, welcome to this Friday edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. I'm Spencer Israel, here with Joel Elkanen and Dennis Dick. On the show today, of course, the big story is the bank earnings, Wells Fargo, Citi, JP Morgan. Don't forget about PNC. I was saying to Brent, everyone always forgets about PNC, but they are the largest regional bank, and they are reporting this morning. So we got the bank earnings. We got I feel like we're going to talk about Snapchat's sentiment among the analysts, and the tide may be turning. We had another downgrade this morning on Snapchat. Going to talk about Fizz, who reported earnings yesterday after the open. We're gonna talk about that. That had a really weird day. We're gonna talk about all that. We're gonna take your questions as always, and we're gonna be joined at 8:35 by our only guest of the day. She is one of our listeners, Lauren. She goes by Thankfulness on Twitter. Joel, how are we doing this morning?
Quiet morning here, Spencer. S&P's trading down 0.75 at 44.75, bumping up against the all-time high, 24.47.50. That would be your all-time closing high. The all-time high in the SPOOS, 24.51.50, 8 points away from that. So we got a target on the upside. Crude trading in the green here by 34 cents, back in the 46 handle, current high 46.54, just 11 cents away from that. And gold and silver moving in tandem today, trying to mount a rally. Gold up by 340 at 12.2070, and silver in the green by 3 cents at 15.72.5. Let's bring in Dennis. Dennis, any fun this morning in pre-market trading?
That's always fun in pre-market trading. There's always kinds of actions. There's always whipsaws as well, and no bigger whipsaw than the JP Morgan report here. And I'll jump into the pre-market action on that in just 1 second, but we might as well get the report from Spencer. They reported earlier today, got the pop and then the drop. How are the numbers, Spencer?
Yeah, JP Morgan, Q2 EPS of $1.82 versus $1.58. Sales of $25.5 billion versus a $25 billion estimate. So they beat on the top and they beat on the bottom, but like you said, the pop and the drop.
And a couple reasons for this. You can come in today and say, why is JP Morgan trading down on such a good report? I'll say a couple things, and I was kind of biased. And I wish I would have been up to trade this report, actually, because I was thinking, this thing pops. I think I want to sell it. Main reason is, well, let's look at what the Fed, you know, has recently done. They've got a little bit more dovish here. So we know that's going to hit the banks a little bit. Now you get an opportunity in the pre-market where a stock pops up to its high. The high we had back on July the 6th was 94.51. We got up to 94.39 here in the pre-market. So you had another chance to get out at the highs despite having a more dovish Fed here. Now, you know, that chance was very short-lived here because we're obviously seeing the stock fall and it's down in the 92 handle there. But for the savvy trader that was up this morning trading on that report saying, hey, if JP Morgan gets a pop, there's probably some institutional traders that want to take some money off the table, because if the Fed is getting more dovish, that's not good for financials.
And what do you think? You think they layered up at that? Not, you know, layer as in, you know, fake offers, but, man, you know.
Just
you
throw out multiple offers, slowly get out. I think, you know, I think what happens is it usually pops on almost nothing. Everybody gets the hell out of the way. So typically when you have an earnings report going to happen in the pre-market, there's not a lot of orders on the book. Why is that? Well, if you have an order sitting out there, you're going to get picked off either way. So let's say, you know, hypothetically, and not using, you know, we'll use JP Morgan as an example, but just say, you know, just other things being equal, there's just the earnings report. Stock closed at 93.10. If you're sitting out there making a market at 93.40, so offering short at 93.40 and buying at 92.70, you're probably going to lose either way, because if the report's really good, stock's going to go up and it's going to pick you off. If the report's really bad, stock's going to go down and it's going to pick you off. So it's basically a lose-lose for market makers when you sit out there at the earnings report, unless you're really, really wide. And, you know, that's why, you know, at a certain point, sometimes they do get really wide, and then obviously, you know, they can make some money that way. But when you're nobody makes tight markets, so it's really thin. And that's, you know, what we call when there's nothing on the book, we call the order book being thin. Then it can blow through these levels very quickly. It can go up on basically nothing. So I didn't see the candle, and you probably have it on your quotes there, Joel, so you can analyze a little bit more than me. But I would imagine that, you know, the book really probably didn't have a lot in it, gets up there. And then if you're an institutional trader, maybe you say, okay, I want to get out. And then you start trying to hit bids, and it probably not a lot of bids to hit, and you can actually, you know, hit it down pretty quickly.
All right. Let's look at that pre-market high to illustrate. Where did I see that night print in the 94? Was that – what time was that at? That was just after the number. Now, just to illustrate your point, Dennis, only 6,000 shares traded in that bracket when it went up and made the high and then came back down. But I don't think that's a number we need to worry about now. We need to find support here. And looking at the range from yesterday, yesterday's low – 92.34. You have a couple other lows here in the $92 area. So far, we're just sitting here right on that support. So 92 is going to be the swing number. Below 92, look out, folks. You have some downside to the lower 91 handle, 91.50. Let's call that just above the July 3rd high.
And we've had multiple banks already report. I think we've heard from everyone now. Citigroup reported around 7:30. Wells Fargo reported a little bit later here. Citigroup, actually, I think it was 7:45. What's the Citigroup numbers look like, Spencer? It is actually trading higher.
Yep, Citi had Q2 EPS of $1.28 versus $1.21, and sales of $17.9 versus $17.4 billion. So, again, good numbers there for Citi.
Trio of top, 68.91, 68.73, 68.76. I don't think this is going to go up to test those levels. If it did, I think every institution is going to be out there with their selling shoes on. So that's something to consider. But, you know, this thing's kind of finding its range here just in the low 67 handle there. So a couple other numbers, too. Joel's probably going to give you the 66.54 low from 2 days ago. I mean, it takes that out, then it's going to be tough sledding for the stock.
Yeah, that 66.54 low is flanked by a 66.60 low and a 66.69 low. We got just a tad below it, but popped off it in the pre-market trading. Coming back on the upside here, we are green on the session, so you want to stay green above that 67.02. And I see another high at 60.
Joel?
Excuse me. Yeah, I just coughed there. 67.57, that's your three-day high.
And then Wells Fargo reported earnings as well. Spencer will give us those results. And it's trading down on the day, too.
Yep. Give me 1 second. My computer just froze up on me. Computer just froze up. So sorry about that. My computer
Let
just,
me do a try and see if I can quickly grab them here. Sorry. So WFC, grabbing them from the Pro because my computer is not frozen. Although my computer is slow, too, here, trying to grab it up. $1.07 versus $1.01, $22.17 billion versus $22.5 billion. So they missed on the revenue. And you really didn't – you saw Wells Fargo actually just briefly trade up to 56. I don't know if there's a news algo running, but that news algo lost money on these today because all these things, if it was buying those things and popping them, then thinking that, oh, they beat on the earnings, that they're going to go up, they were all instantly back down. So obviously, well, that's the news algo, if it is running there, isn't feeling out sentiment or isn't listening to the pre-market show, what we're talking about. But Wells Fargo did beat on the earnings, did miss on revenue. It is trading down 50 cents in the pre-market.
You have four out of your last five highs at the 55.70 level. We are 57 cents below that. So look at that. Maybe even some big paper at 56. But I'm looking at that. Coming back on the downside here, let's look at yesterday's low. We are trading through that right now. So looking for a target on the downside, a short-term target, 54.60 was your two-day low. That's a potential area. If you fall below that, then you're really getting into an ugly-looking area here. Basis the daily charts, a lot of air between 52.50 and 54.50. So important that 54.60 holds up today.
Last financial I reported was PNC Financial, and it's traded up to 129. It's offered at 128.90, though. It's offered at 128.99. I would not be surprised if this one started leaking here, too. You have multiple highs up in the 128s here. So one thing, PNC did gap down on the close a little bit. It was ready to close up at 127.97 and then end up closing at 127.32. So a big gap down of 70 cents in the chart. Sometimes those, you know, come back. But we got an earnings report driving this thing here. We got a lot of the other financials, although Citigroup's still trading up. I'm going to say 130. 130 looks big to me on this.
You want the PNC number real quick?
Yeah. Give us
all
the
right.
number.
Q2 EPS, $2.10 versus $2.02. Q2 sales of $4.1 billion versus $3.99.
Remember what we – yeah, I'm here. remember what we our nickname for this was? It bright when Conrad used to trade it a lot.
Punk.
Yep. I guess maybe we're not the only one. You got the quick spike up to 29.82, but that's been snuffed out. So Dennis mentioned the multiple highs in the 128 handle. Interestingly, we are trading right at the former all-time high of 128.25. Not sure if it's bid or offered there, but that's important for that to hold. Yesterday's low is way down there at 125.92, but I don't know. I don't think people are going to be chasing this thing, you know, above this all-time high. Pre-market high, 29.82, and that's a big buffeted by a big 130 level. So can you see if there's any paper there, or did it close too far away from that?
I can go look for paper. Hang on. Go into the book, open the punk book, PNC. One. I don't see much here, Joel. No, 130 is 24,000 shares.
That's
so there's
big.
Some paper up at one. That's significant for $130 stock. So there is some paper up at 130. I don't know if we're getting up there. And I've started a short position too.
How'd that target work out yesterday?
Target was good. So I remember on the show, I said, actually, we did it, and then we talked about it. And then once we stopped talking about it, then I did it, and we came back to it, and I said, you know, obviously I've started a short position on it. And I shorted, I think, in the pre-market, around 53.75.
Yeah.
I think it was right around there, right after we talked about it. Because I don't like to, you know, talk about it, and then, you know, once I've said it, then, you know, I can come on and maybe short it after I've said it. I don't like to, you know, short it, then say it, because I don't like to talk my book. But, right. You know, we talked about it, and then I shorted it. And then 53.75 was what the price I was able to get. I held it, and, you know, I was small size. I should have gotten a little bit bigger size. But, and obviously, always when you get a winning trade, you get a bigger size. But I just held until the open. I actually opened down at 52.21. I covered the open, so I got a buck and a half on it. So
Why'd you cover on the open?
Well, you know what? It was trading actively around 53, 52.90, and then it indicated open like 51.5. So I was like, there's just a lot of selling pressure at the open. So when I see something actively trading around 53 and then open at 52.21, it kind of feels like a little bit of an anomaly to me. It felt like it opened too low. So that's why I was covering on the open. Plus, it's a buck and a half. I mean, I was getting a lot of it back. I mean, it was still, you know, good numbers coming from Target. So it wasn't like, you know, this is, you know, irrational, you know, that the stock was trading higher. I just felt like there was going to be sellers come in because the stock had been so much underwater, and we were talking about the overhead supply. So that's why I shorted in the first place. It came in quite a bit, a buck and a half, and I covered. Obviously happy I did. That was almost the low of the day. Stock has come back since then, and, you know, and now actually continuing to move higher here this morning, probably getting boosted here. We had some positive comments from Goldman on Walmart as they upgraded the stock to buy this morning.
One question, Dennis, just for, you know, for some of our newer listeners and just for order entry. Did you go market on that, or
you put market orders in the pre-market?
No. On the open, the New York Open.
OPG. I never. And I will tell you right now, I never put market orders. I use marketable limits where I will put my bid significantly above where I feel like it's going to open, so I'm going to participate. But I never send market orders. And, you know, if you can learn one thing from this show, put a price on your orders, because market orders can obviously, you know, really, you know, we're in a high-frequency trading world. Price can move very quickly, especially on a stock that's got major news on it. You might get a price you really don't want. So what I use is what I would call a marketable limit order. So let's say the offer is 76.25, you know, or let's just say, you know, on Target, we'll use Target as the actual example. I think it was offered around 52.50 or something, or 52.40. I'm putting my bid like 52.90 OPG for the open. So I'm going to get that. I'm pretty much guaranteeing I'm going to get that opening print. But if for whatever reason everything flips and the thing opens at 54 bucks, I'm not just randomly getting filled up at $54. So I'm putting a price, but I'm thinking that, you know, my price is high enough above the ask, which the stock hasn't opened yet, because I'm using an OPG order, which is on the opening print. So I'm trying to participate in that opening print. I'm putting it higher, significantly higher than I feel like it's going to open, because I want that opening print. But I'm not putting it just random, like, you know, an MOC order, which is, or just
market,
you know, marketing on the open, an MOO order, because then if it randomly just flipped and opened up at 54 or 55 bucks, then I'm not going to get filled. I don't want to be filled up there. So I always put a price on my orders.
All right. Good explanation there. 8.15, Spoo's down $1.25. 44 and a quarter. These banks are not really affecting the market. I'm sure we're finding some strength in other sectors. But have we covered all the earnings? Do you want to go to some of that crazy after-hours action in the cybersecurity stocks?
Yeah, CYBR came out with some numbers there after the bell. Spencer, give us the CYBR numbers because they are hitting the cybersecurity stocks this morning.
Yeah, CyberArk, yesterday after the bell reported preliminary sales for the quarter of $57 to $57.5 million versus a $61.9 million estimate, and non-GAAP operating income in the range of $8.5 to $8.9 million. The prior guidance was $10.9 to $11.7 million. So they're just coming in there and slashing that guidance.
Stock absolutely hit hard here last night, and I mean hard, when you got stock trading down 18%. So close to 51, and these numbers came out, and boom, stock's down 10 bucks. So this is a big move here for CyberArk, CYBR, and all the other ones getting dragged down with it. You can look at FireEye, FEYE, trading down 3% here at $15. Palo Alto Networks, PANW, trading down 2.1%. Even Symantec, which have been moving up a little bit, was offered down and is offered down here this morning as well. So you're seeing, you know, and the other ones too. I'm sure there's some other ones. Chad, if you want to let us know, or Brentster on the desk, you can let us know some other ones too. But all of them trading down here this morning.
And I don't know, both you guys are out, and we had Kenny hit the bid click on the show, and he co-hosted with me, and boy, he was trashing these stocks. I think he even took a little bit of heat from the chat on it, but he just said he wouldn't be touching them in his portfolio. You see why here. This thing has gone straight down. Interesting pre-market chart. You got a low at 41 even, Dennis, and you're holding in there. But man, oh man, it's not exactly, you're bouncing, right? You're just right at 41.60. So I'd keep an eye on that pre-market low of 41 even. Now you are trading at levels you haven't seen since, boy, oh boy, 2016. So if I was short, which I'm not, and it took out 41, I would just go half and whole numbers, you know, until you can find the bottom. 40, obviously a psychological level, but a little worrisome here that this thing had a 10-point drop and it can't even muster a point bounce.
Yeah. Hack the ETF here, HACK. Colt's luck letting us know that. And obviously the stock has been performing well. I'm going to go look at what is actually in the hack. So I'm just going to go look up the components of that here. But give us a breakdown on HACK too here, Joel, because this could actually be moving this morning.
Yeah, not a lot printing this morning in hack, the ETF of the cybersecurity stocks. Very little. Boy, oh boy, you had a nice double top to lean on yesterday, but that's going to be hard. 30.74, 30.75. No real trades that it's indicating flat on the session. So love to get that flat on the day. That's not going to happen. It's going to open lower, maybe around the $30 level. That's your three-day low. So I'll use 30 as the swing number. Two lows at 29.98 and 30.01. If not, you could be easily seeing 29.5. Dennis, you got the components
I'm
there?
Still,
I do. I do. I have them. I have them.
Okay, Spencer, give it to us.
Top 10 components, PANW, Palo Alto, Akamai Technologies, Barracuda, CyberArk, FireEye, Imperva, that's six right there, Fortinet, Sophos Group, Checkpoint, and Trend Micro are your top 10 components. None have the highest is Palo Alto. They are only 4.37% of the fund.
Wow. Sounds like it might be down today, though. There's a lot of names in there that are trading down this morning. So the hackster here probably not going to have a great day.
Palo Alto Networks made a new high for the move yesterday, and now you're trading at 138, so you might have had some breakout traders. You did have a double top at 140-130. You got above that yesterday, 143.90, but closed in the lower part of the session at 141 even. Oh, boy, just pick your daily lows there. You haven't hit 137 yet. That's your three-day low, and your four-day low is 135.60.
Let's jump over here to ratings land, and we briefly talked about Walmart, but Boeing, we've got ULTA, we've got F5 Systems. The one I want to start with, though, is Snap, which Spencer, I can't talk here, briefly discussed on the intro to the show. We are getting another downgrade here from Snap. And we talked about this, I believe, yesterday when we had the Stiefel upgrade. We were saying there's a lot of analysts still out to lunch here. And there's a lot of analysts that probably chase price. So as the Snap price falls, you can expect more downgrades to come as these analysts have to adjust their price targets and possibly adjust their ratings for the poor action in SNAP. That can put added pressure on it. So that's why we weren't getting all excited yesterday with the Stiefel upgrade. Even though Stiefel very influential, it was a nice pop for one day for the stock. Problem is, more downgrades were likely coming. We were saying that yesterday, and those downgrades come even the next day with Cowen downgrading stocks this morning.
Can I jump in here for a second? The last four ratings on Snap, going back to June. So June 9th, we had Citigroup downgrading to neutral. July 11th, Morgan downgrading to equal weight, so neutral. Yesterday, Stiefel upgrading to buy. Today, Cowen downgrading to neutral. So three of the last four ratings over the last month have been downgrades.
And when you looked this up on the show yesterday, how many analysts still have buys or overweights on this issue?
Well,
because those guys are coming in.
Well, it's still a lot, right? So
can you look it up right now?
Yeah, I mean,
go to the Pro. It's a cool tool we've got in the Pro. They can look up where every analyst is. I'm just wondering how many more could potentially be coming here. And there's a strategy in here to look at, you know, when stock has had a significant move, where are the analysts? And if the analysts are all out to lunch, you can say the analysts are probably all going to chase price, and that's going to exaggerate the move even further coming forward there. So here is what we're doing in Snap. This is what we did yesterday as an exercise, and you'd already obviously be making money if you were shorting up, you know, when the stock was popping yesterday off this strategy. But how many analysts right now have a buy or overweight on SNAP?
Here, I threw the Pro up on the screen right now so you can see. Excellent. What you can see what I'm seeing. I'm looking at this rating column. Towards the far end of the screen now. Let me try to scroll down for a minute. Like I said yesterday, it's still mostly split. There's a lot of buys and a lot of neutrals. So if I can go
neutrals back, are fine, but then you have to look at their price targets too, because it might lower their price targets. But yeah, how many buys are there that need to come down yet?
All right, looking at the number, looking at the sheer number of green on the screen, I see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14,
wow.
And one of whom was Citi, who downgraded it in June. So 13 buy ratings 12, because Cowen downgraded this morning too. So, and Morgan. So 11 buy ratings still on Snap, and I see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 neutrals.
Oh.
So 11 analysts are still pretty much out to lunch on this. Analysts chase price. They need to adjust. They don't like to look bad at the end of the year. So they will eventually probably come in. Unless Snap has, you know, an impressive rally for whatever reason, which, you know, stocks can do, these analysts probably are going to be coming in. And every time the thing gets downgraded, you see this one, it's down 2%. Every time it gets downgraded, it knocks the stock down. So if you have potentially 11 more analysts that are out to lunch, that's a lot of potential downgrades coming on the stock yet. So plus, you also made a point this morning about the Spencer, what was the other point you were making on Snap? Not about the analysts, but the lockup expiring?
Yeah, the lockup is the 30th, the first expiration. So you could see a lot of the insiders just like running for the hills.
Some problems ahead. Choppy waters ahead for Snap still, I think.
Even Dennis, I'm going to tell you something here, and I don't want you to put a large short position on, okay?
It's hard to borrow. Actually can for now. I do have a low K now, just not when I wanted it, when it was breaking down through 17.
Guess who still has a buy rating on this? Initiated coverage at a buy on March 27th with a $27 price target, and they have not altered their buy rating yet.
You are like in a windstorm?
Guess who?
Who?
Goldman Sachs.
Oh. Well, I'm not going to say anything bad about Goldman. I like
No, I'm not saying it's bad. I'm saying there could be a potential
downgrade. They are influential, yeah. They are influential.
So
Goldman comes with you.
Let's run through the list of who still has a buy or outperform or whatever. Credit Suisse, RBC, Jefferies, Goldman. Those are the big ones. And there's a couple of smaller firms. Drexel Hamilton, Monis Crispy Hart, Cleveland Research, Summit Redstone, William Blair. Those are your buys.
Ticking, ticking down in the pre-market. Your pre-market low is 1530, and we only have one number on the downside, the all-time low that was made on Wednesday at 1521.
So either way, we're just giving you a setup here that, you know, Snap might not be out of the woods here at 1535. Jumping back over and plus, I don't get it. I don't use it, though, so I'll just leave it at that. Okay, so let's jump into a couple of these other ratings changes because we were focused on that one. Boeing getting upgraded this morning here at JP Morgan is trading up to $2.22. Boeing has been an absolute monster. This goes to show you again, everybody that is, you know, hated the stock back in 2016. This stock almost ticked $100. It almost got down to 100, got it down to $102.10 back in February 12, 2016. And now it's doubled from there in 1.5 years. I love still saying it. I'm a momentum trader, but a contrarian investor. And I wish I would have been a contrarian investor in Boeing. I was wanting to buy it back then. For whatever reason, I did not. Mistake. But sometimes, you know, when everybody's hating on a stock, if you stick a little bit in your investment portfolio and forget about it, you're happy you did. Here you are a year and a half later. You would have been very happy because you'd doubled your money in Boeing when everybody hated it at 102.
And I think the last time, when did Trump have his tweet? Was that in December? And that was the last time it traded.
150, I think.
Yeah, it never traded under 150 in the regular session. That was actually back in the second week of December. Trump had some tweet about Air Force One, cancel it right now because of cost overruns.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and they beat it down under 150. The low on that day was 150.02. Now you're over 200. I'll just give you your former all-time high at 208.61. We're only a few pennies away from that. So look to improve on the all-time high. Maybe if this market gets going, you get happy. Maybe you see 210. But 208.61, that's my number of the day in Boeing.
F5 Networks here getting downgraded at Piper this morning. It's down $5. Man, these ratings. These analysts have some major influence here. Anyways, F5. Taking out all the support. So it's been really consolidating. I mean, we've been in consolidation station here for F5 Networks for a long time. But now we're breaking down through support. This is very concerning here for FFIV. What do you think of this chart?
Boy, you just got a lot of room on the monthly chart. You had a big run up from 116.50. I'll just give you trading right at your pre-market low at 123.20. Not a lot of volume taking it down, but it's going down nevertheless. Taking out the bottom of that channel, that trading range that's been holding. So if you get back up, you're not too far from the low of the move. The former low of the move was right here at 124.27. So you might get a chance to sell it there on a pop, but underneath that, just a lot of air in here using your half and whole numbers. Maybe 120 may come into play today, but trading down, but on pretty light volume.
ULTA also with some analyst action. Goldman giving it the upgrade this morning. We talked about ULTA yesterday, and this stock's been in a downtrend here, but getting positive comments over here from GS will probably help the stock.
Did you get any of this, Dennis? It popped up to 270. Oh, very light volume, though. Popped up to 270.
This morning?
Yeah.
Come on. Really? No. Really? I see it there. Odd lots.
Yeah.
13 okay. Points? Come on, these people, man. It's just odd lots. But, you know, sometimes things just get overdone. That's way overdone.
Okay. We're still up $6 at 63.40. Two numbers to look at here, 65.40, that split your two highs in the last two sessions, and then your three-day high up at 69.25, but I don't mind this rating here. I mean, you've had, the Dennis long-term investing theory, buying on weakness. This thing was well over $300, traded close to 250, now getting a little bit of a bounce. I think you might get a chance to see it a little bit cheaper than where it's trading now if you're looking for a long-term investment. But we know what happened to Target yesterday. At least in the pre-market, it got a little bit overdone. So we'll see what happens. Just a lot of air. I wouldn't be shorting this thing. A lot of air. I mean, a 50% retracement. 310 to 260. That's a 50-point move. 25 points. That take you back 275, 280 range.
Retailers, though, are picking it up here the last couple of days. And we talked on the show from the target numbers that that was possibly going to lift all retail. It really did. I mean, we had that right on the money. GPS opened right near the lows, straight up. Macy's, Kohl's, JWN, all the stocks we talked about yesterday that could possibly get a bid off the target numbers did catch a big bid. And they gave you a chance. I mean, you know, GPS only opened up a dime and then ran up another box. So you're seeing some money fly into retail here right now. That could continue here today with Walmart trading up as much as it is. So, you know, it's scary to fade retail right now. The value trade is still on. You know, we talked about this, you know, rotation from growth to value a couple weeks ago, and it kind of took a pause here for a week, but I'm starting to feel like it's coming back on here again. You're starting to see a lot of other value stocks catch bids here. So value, you know, valuation does matter at a certain point in time, you know, that's it always matters. Like it's just a matter of how long it doesn't matter for. But in the long run, valuation still wins. I still think the analysts crunching their numbers, you know, figuring stuff out in the long run still makes a lot of sense.
Continuing on the retail theme, Dennis, J.C. Penney trying to get into the $5 handle. We talked
about
where'd
that go yesterday?
It went to 498.
Wow.
Went from 462 to 498. Yeah. Not taking much heat off the open, a 477 open, but if you were looking for a gap fill, your previous day's high was 469, it ticked 468, and then it went up and hit 503. Now, this is like the fourth, fifth time up, you know, trying to break through $5 here, so I think Jar was long this one. Yeah, Jar, I hope you held through that. Now getting over that key level, psychological level of $5. I did a little article on this one, so if you check on your Benzinga Pro or Benzinga.com, you can see what a couple other catalysts could be if this stock can eventually get over $5.
Let's jump over here to some other imbalanced look, and we just kind of break at 830. What do I see here? Pfizer 40,000 to sell. The banks show small buying bounces, but again, they're all trading down, so it's very early there yet. Alibaba, man, how many days in a row do we say Alibaba has a buying bounce? Is it every day, Joel? It's got 56,000 to buy here again. Just some institution that just buys 50,000 shares of this every morning. They've been making money, man. 150, we talked about it yesterday, got to there on the kisser, couldn't take it out. I thought it might. It's trying here again this morning, but 150 still, you know, it's trouble for it. It's got to get up over that. If it doesn't get up over today, I might start getting concerned. But 150 is still a big number for Alibaba.
Yeah, I was thinking, man, this thing is just primed. There's, you know, you gave the old speech on when you break out to new all-time highs, there's no one trying to break even on it. And it didn't. It didn't do it. Maybe today will be the day. Just that little pop here we got in the S&P Consumer Price Index, unchanged in June. Spoos are bumping up against yesterday's high, which is 47.5. That is also your all-time closing high and then all-time high in the market, 24. 51.50. It doesn't look like these banks are going to be a drag on the market too much.
No, the bank's actually holding on here quite well. Actually, that's not true, Joel. JP Morgan's now down $1.70. So I was saying, I was just looking at one there. Bank America wasn't down that much, but they're actually starting to get hit pretty well now. JP Morgan down $1.65, Citigroup down 42 cents, Morgan Stanley. But money always flies into something else. So it looks like they're coming out of the financials here today, despite good reports from almost all of them. But they are moving into, you know, other stocks here, and they're moving probably into the value names. Also, oil, I'm looking at that this morning. USO is starting to catch a bid here again. So a lot of your oil stocks are trading up here this morning. And, you know, other stocks trading up. I've seen a lot of different stocks trade up, but retail looks strong. Oil looks strong. Some of your defensive names, we've got the TLT pop in here, so you know some of your yield names, like your XLU2 is popping up here 25 cents this morning. So financials look like they're going to have a rough day.
And take a look. We talked about X and that note from JP Morgan yesterday. That had a nice move. You would have taken some heat buying it off the open. But if you were keying on the Wednesday's low, 22.47, you would have got a 22.46 print. Now you made a new high of the move. You're getting into that big, big gap area that would take you all the way to nearly $30. So 30.06 fills the gap. So X getting off the mat here. We've been talking about this one. But it looks like that JP Morgan finally got it going to the upside. New high for the move here since the debacle after Q1 earnings.
Big pop here for X, obviously, and that's a breakout for X as well. So I had a little trade on it. I was long it overnight, popped, and then it hung out almost all until 2 o'clock. Really, it was down, on the day there, and then it got the big pop after 2 o'clock. What was the news that really popped it there at 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock yesterday? You saw all the steel stocks take off. Like, if you look at the intraday chart, right around like 3 o'clock, right before, they all popped. Like, U.S. steel went from 22.70 up to over $24, all real fast.
All right. In pro here, we have Trump says he's considering both quotas and tariffs on steel. All right. I see that a little bit after the pop, but that was on the Bazinga News pro feed just before 3 o'clock. And what time did you have that pop? You had that pop a little bit before it, but Trump moving that one.
And that helps all your U.S. steel companies, because if steel's coming in, your U.S. steel is going to do better. So that makes sense.
All right, Spencer, 8:36. We're late for our first guest and only guest.
We're late for an important date, so we'll be right back with our first and only guest of the day. And welcome back, everybody, to a Friday edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. I'm Spencer Israel here with Joel Elkanian and Dennis Dick. We're on the line. One of our listeners, Lauren, a.k.a. Thankfulness on Twitter, and StockTwits, too. Lauren, how's it going today?
Great. Good morning, Spencer, Dennis, Joel.
Lauren, thanks for coming on. You are a faithful listener to the show. So before we get into the market and some of what you're looking at, what's on your radar, we have people listening and watching the show all over the country and all over the world. You are kind of out on more towards, the Southwest Coast or the West Coast. So do you get up every day and listen to our show at 5 in the morning, or do you use it a trading tool, when you get up to listen to help shape your thoughts for the upcoming trading day?
Yes, I do wake up early, but not early enough to catch the beginning of your show, and I listen to it during the market hours, and I love it because it just shows me what you're saying in the morning sometimes happens during the trading day. But I do wake up about 6 a.m. I wish I could get up earlier, but West Coast is very early here. It's helpful, though. It's really helpful to me. And I think everyone should listen to it at any time, even after the market closes.
Really? So you just kind of, go back and note what we say and then look at the activity and then, whether or not it fits with what you're trading or your decisions. So you're kind of fact checking on us, huh?
Not really fact checking, but it's analysis. I want to see if your analysis is, plays out, and it's very useful. I'm not checking up on you guys, but you guys are right most of the time.
But besides us, you do your own research with your technical analysis. Also looking at the fundamentals. Do you watch Cramer? Do you, where else do you get your trading ideas from and help you factor into your decisions?
Oh, yes. My favorite is Scott Redler. Do you know who he is?
Red Dog.
Red Dog.
Red Dog. He's a technician, so his technical analysis is spot on. He's great. He's one of my favorites. I do listen to Cramer. He's more for entertainment purposes, but he's fun to, listen to his banter. And I just listen to myself for the most part. I like to listen to sentiment and I do my own technical analysis. So it's a combination of many things.
Hey, Lauren, Dennis, just want to expand. So it looks like you're taking a lot of information in from a lot of different places. How do you not, and this is an issue that I think a lot of traders have, because they're getting information from Twitter, they're getting information from StockTwits, getting information from CNBC, getting information from Pre-Market Prep. I mean, there's different opinions coming from all over the place. How do you formulate your own opinion of that stock when you have so many other opinions coming in?
Well, I've learned to stick to my you know, my tried and true stocks that I know like the back of my hand. So I've had in my investment portfolio for a year and a half now, I've had Amazon, I've had Tesla, I've had Apple.
Wow.
You know, the same,
nice portfolio.
The same stocks. Facebook. I stick to them because they're growth stocks and they're outperforming. They have relative strength. And even when we had this last, you know, 6 weeks where we dropped, some of them dropped below the 50-day. The ones that didn't, the only one that didn't, I think, was BABA, right? That's the only stock that didn't drop below the 50-day. And it kept, it actually stayed above the 8-day moving average during this entire last 6 weeks. I don't have BABA currently. I feel like it's a conflict of interest when you have Amazon, although it's, I just find it amusing that BABA wants to copy Amazon and everything. Isn't that interesting? They're not original, but China's such a huge economy. So, you know, it's a good stock for, it's a great stock. I just don't own it. Do you have it, Dennis?
I've been talking about having Alibaba for a long time. The one thing, you know, and probably is, you know, downside of my portfolio is that I have like a value portfolio. And if the multiple's not low and if, you know, the dividend's not high, I typically don't have it in my investment portfolio. Sometimes value stocks work. Sometimes they don't. They haven't been working that well for the last couple of years. But, you know, I've been running an investment portfolio for 18 years and the value portfolio has worked for me over that longer time frame. I kind of follow the Warren Buffett approach where BABA and Amazon, the multiples are just a little bit too high for me to have them. Wish I had them. My second question to you, because you know you sound like you've had these for a while, how do you stick with them so long? Because this is a problem as a trader I have, is, you know, and you know I try not to log into my investment portfolio just so I don't sell this stuff, but how do you stick with your position so long when everybody else seems to be trading in and out of everything?
Well, that's a good question. I was trading in and out of Amazon up until it hit $820. So my cost basis, since then, I've not traded it. It's been sitting in my portfolio since $820, and I was tempted to sell it when I had an over $30 profit sitting there. And I said, no, I'm just going to let it go for another two more years, let it sit there and chill. And I'm happy with it. I feel comfortable. I think it's got, I think Amazon's just coming into its growth. And I've looked at the financial forecasts on it on Yahoo. I've done my research. I think the next few quarters are going to be even bigger. And that one I'm sticking in there. And I know, Dennis, you think it's priced high, but there's a lot of fundamentals that cause the price of the stock to get that high. For example, the volatility, the daily volatility and the float, the demand. Tesla has the same type of chart. NVIDIA is the same type of chart where there's such a, the relative volume compared to the float, it just causes the price to go up. And then many retailers complain that it's too expensive, but it moves like 10 points a day average. So I like those kind of stocks that have that daily volatility. Tesla is another one I have in my portfolio. I think it's a great growth story. I can see why GE is at its lowest right now. And I know that Dennis is tempted to stick it, or he has it in his portfolio, right?
I still got GE. I've had GE. It was one of the first stocks I bought back, I think, in the year 2000. When I first started investing in the market, because I traded before that and I started at Bright full time, and then I started, you know, okay, well, I started to, you know, accumulate a little bit of money there, and I was like, well, I need to start investing this money too. I think General Electric was one of the first stocks I ever bought, and I wasn't even in on a great price. I think I bought it around $30, and it ended up, you know, being up over $60 at one point in time. It's down here at $26.87. I mean, it's had some spinoffs, had some different things. The only thing, it's paid me a dividend of 3 or 4% for 17 years, so I've definitely got my money back out of it just in the form of dividends. That's why I kind of like the dividends. But when I've stuck with it for 17 years, I think I'm sticking with it.
Yeah, the dividend is great. Can't complain. You know, that's, some people like to have dividend stocks. I like my Apple dividend. I like my NVIDIA dividend. And speaking of NVIDIA, Joel, can you please pronounce NVIDIA?
Okay, this is nice.
That's funny. Joel, we are
getting up on Joel right now.
I'm not going to say NVIDIA. It's NVIDIA. I've been saying that for a long time. Lauren, I got an important question for you here. And Ace is making a comment here about, you know, Puma Bulls and, you know, people that, you know, have very high expectations for the market. So how do you handle a day when you had the June tech wreck, when, you know, Goldman Sachs comes out basically assaulting your portfolio? Now, do you try and, you know, do you have any hedging tactics there on, or you just look at your P&L that day and you say, wow, that's a lot of red, but I'm sticking with my convictions? How do you, you know, I mean, that was a big event and a lot of these stocks have come back, but, you know, being an active trader there, the volatility was, you know, riding against you. Do you have an exit point on the downside where you're going to take off some of these stocks? How do you handle that?
Great question. Best question. This is what I do. I sell puts. I see it as an opportunity to sell puts at, for Amazon, for example, when it had that flash crash that day. I mean, it was a rough 6 weeks. Yes. And so what I did is I sold $850 puts. Then I also got another one for, I have three different ones, $850 and $950 strike prices. And which other ones did I have? I have to look at my portfolio. I have three different strike prices in there, but I'm standing in front of those walls. I don't think, I mean, it's, look, I think $950 is the, really the first wall for Amazon, but $850, that's long gone. See ya. And I'm already up, I'm already up like 12,000 on those just in a few weeks, you know? So I sold puts. I bought some more. What I should have done with Tesla is I thought about selling when it hit that, you know, double top at 385, but I'm still holding it long. I believe in that story. And I think that it's not just a car company. It's artificial intelligence. It's a tech company. It's an energy company. So that's why I think GE is not going to do so well. I think that's a sorry, Dennis, but I think it's a declining sector. I think that oil is a declining commodity. I think Tesla is going to be really an important company and stock in the near future. And I really see it even doubling in price the next couple years. So I kept it in my portfolio. I have real unrealized profits there with Amazon and Tesla that were over 60,000.
Do you ever consider, I know you sold puts on the decline, but when Tesla got up there at the double top there, and I see what you're looking at the charts, 386.99 and 386.95. Do you ever consider selling calls against the position? I mean, you probably could have got some nice premium in like the 400s at that time. Do you ever consider that as part of your strategy, or do you not want to lose the stock?
Yeah, that's a good strategy for someone who already owns a stock at that price. I have a great cost basis. My original purchase was at $180 and I had 900 shares. So I sold some, you know, I did secure profits after past $300, somewhere around that, little over that price. Then I kept the last 300 shares just sitting in my portfolio, and that has a cost basis of $280. So I think it's a better strategy for someone who's got a higher cost basis. Am I right? Or am I saying that not right?
No. I mean, it's just, a lower cost basis too, because you would have basically, when it got to 385, if you could have sold a 400 call for $5, you know, you're basically exiting, you know, you're not losing money until it gets above 405. On the downside, yeah, you give yourself $5 worth of protection, but, you know, once it, you know, it falls and that $5, you know, evaporates to zero, then you're naked on the downside. So, no, just a strategy. You sold puts. I was wondering if you sold calls on rallies.
That's a good one. I've been looking at a strategy to add to my, I've been doing lots of options trading, by the way. So my portfolio is three times bigger than last time we spoke on September 19th. it's really high leverage, and I love trading options because it's just made my portfolio grow so much.
All right. Be careful out there.
But I know. I mean, I've had losses too, but of course, you know, you're going to have losses with options. They expire. But yeah, that selling calls is a good way to when it's, you know, on the upside. And but I didn't expect it to, as soon as I heard that downgrade, that was a good time to probably sell to open that position. You're right. But can we look at the Facebook? That's made some all-time highs. That's looking really good. Can you pull that chart up?
Yeah, I mean, what can you say bad about it? It made a new all-time high yesterday at 159.78. It made an all-time closing high at 159.26. I would just wait 5 up days in a row in a tight range. So I'd wait, you know, keep an eye on the highest low. And then if, you know, it takes that out right now, it's 158.42, then you could see some downside. All right.
Okay. I sold my position yesterday, but I'm looking to get back in before earnings. So I had to secure those profits there. That one I did sell. I did sell NVIDIA. And just letting you know, I do sell and rebuy my positions when they retrace. So I do that. I do the Fibonacci retracement entries. Anyway, that's what I do. So thank you for having me on the show.
Lauren, a.k.a. Thankfulness, thanks for hopping on today. And we will definitely be in touch. And you should come to our event. You're out in California. We're having an event in San Francisco in September. I'll tell you about it over email, but you should definitely come. So Lauren, a.k.a. Thankfulness, have a good one and good luck out there today.
Thank you so much, you all. Have a good day yourselves. Take care.
All right.
S&P futures hanging up near the highs of the session. We hit 47.25, 47 even yesterday's high, 47.5. That's your all-time closing high.
And we're still seeing banks weak. Goldman down $2.80 now. Citi down 56 cents. J.P. Morgan down $1.60. Wells Fargo down $1.14. So we're seeing this rotation here with the TLT rallying as much as it is. Like we said before, now TLT is now up 84 cents. XLF is obviously going the opposite direction, down to 1.1%. With the banks getting hit as hard as they are, I mean, you're seeing money move into some of those yield names. You know, they like the REITs, like the utility stocks, like the stocks with higher dividends this morning. That's where the rotation is going. It's all about rotation. It's what this market's all about. And if you can figure out where it's rotating early, sometimes you can make some money. And that's what we're trying to point out to you guys.
JP Morgan, Dennis mentioned, down $1.64. Nearly a million shares have traded. Now let's see here. 91.41, where we're currently trading at. That was your July 3rd low, and then another low in the just below that, just above 91 bucks at 91.16. But as much as this is going down, Dennis, I mean, I've traded JP Morgan on earnings days, and there's going to be some rip-roaring rallies here, you know, eventually. We'll see if it can get up yesterday's low. What do we need to do to get to yesterday's low? No, not too 80 cents away from 92.34. So if you're looking for a gap fill, trying to get out of this thing, 92.30, 92.34 could be an area of resistance if it goes into rally mode.
Gold, silver popping big time here too off those 830 numbers. GLD now trading up 1.1%. SLV also trading up 2% here this morning. I mean, sometimes, you know, it's a capitulation low, and that silver flash crash last week when we were talking about it after hours, that was the low. And they've turned around here on silver, and they've bought it ever since here. So capitulation sometimes ends it. And capitulation is really when we say all the you know, people who have been buying this thing throw in the towel and say, get me the hell out. And that's what we saw in SLV. We saw it as in the form of a flash crash and went down there. It tried to retest those lows actually in the regular session as well, and they held. And now you're seeing it actually bounce back quite a bit here, and silver is hot this morning.
Yeah, back over 16 here. Looking at the SLV, having that move up as well. It's up 32 cents, getting back over 15. Back over 15 at 15.19. And silver back into the 16 handle, currently trading at 16.02. So if you were patient on that silver decline, getting a nice pop. And usually once these things get going in one direction, it's pretty hard to stop.
856, quick and balanced. Look again, Alibaba's buying balance has grown. It is trading through 150 right now. This is obviously just during the regular session. I got to go look at the buck. going to the Baba Buck and just seeing if there is something at 150, or did we take it out yesterday? 150, 47,000 shares. You know what? But there's another 52,000 shares trying to buy that this morning. So somebody's been 52,000, 150. They're like, it's going through 150 here this morning is what they're saying. So I think it does take out the 150 in the regular session here. Where it goes from there, who knows? You just got to be careful that the Baba breakout doesn't become a fake out. Everybody's been watching that 150. If it does, if you are playing for a breakout through 150, I always say you want it to stay above 150. And if it gets up above 150, goes to 150 and a half, and then starts tanking down to 149.5. Well, that's not a breakout anymore. It could end up being a fake out there. So I like it when they break out and they continue to run. And the concerning thing, not that there's anything concerning about this Baba chart at all, but is there a lot of rotation going to value today? And I wouldn't consider Baba a value stock. So I'm just somewhat cautious of this rally here in Baba, although I still like the stock long term.
Where are we at on imbalances, though? You kind of got off on a
tangent. So I gave you Baba, 74,000 to buy. Twitter, which has been a monster as of late, 84,000 to sell. Somebody's trying to book some profits here on Twitter. GE, 69,000 to buy. GE's been on a little bit of the comeback trail last 3 days. Again, a value stock. Value's been catching a little bit of a bid. JP Morgan is now 56,000 to sell. That's going to grow. General Motors, 39,000 to buy. It's value stock. They're all, otherwise, they're pretty small.
In Twitter, just got an important level for you Twitter traders to keep an eye on. 1967, that was your high yesterday, and the previous day's high was 1954. Then the initial earnings run took that thing up to 1978. So all kinds of resistance up there ahead of that psychological $20 level. So we'll see what happens. A little bit of a sell imbalance today. But Twitter, if we get above that 1980, clear out the sellers at 20. Man, what do you think? Twitter in the 20s, Dennis. Maybe time to stick it in your portfolio?
No. It's valuation, and he doesn't fit my description. And maybe I should be adding some growth stocks. Maybe I should be adding some more. But I've stuck with value for 17 years, and sometimes the value stocks go on sale, and that's when the growth stocks go on sale, and sometimes they become value. And that's when I can get some decent stocks in my portfolio. I mean, I bought all the biotechs back in 2010, 2011 when they were on sale. I think they're kind of on sale again, a lot of them. So I don't even mind some of the prices on these things now. But that's just it. If you're a long term investor, you don't have to be jumping in when everybody else is jumping in. I like to jump in when everybody else is jumping out, because that's when I get the best deals.
All right, just want to make a quick note on Apple here. It's been dragged down a little bit by Bank of America about delaying iPhone 8 launch, whatnot. Yesterday it hit its highest level since that tech wreck day. The previous high was 48.28. You got to 48.49 yesterday, but fell back to close under that. So still a lot of resistance there in that 148 handle, but you can look on your daily charts, see all the air in here from that tech wreck day. You also may have some people positioning ahead of earnings, like Lauren is doing in Facebook. She took some profits. She might want to try and re-get in from earnings. So very important to see what happens in the 148 handle in Apple. Spencer, 8:59, you want to wrap up today's show and preview what's on the docket for next week?
Well, very trader heavy next week, but not going to matter for you, Joel, because you won't even be here. You're leaving us. Where are you going?
Going to gorgeous northern Harbor Springs, Michigan, right near Petoskey and the Mackinac Bridge. Going to go up there, do a little swimming, a little boating and stuff. But you know what? I'm sure you and Dennis will do a great job. And don't lose any lunches for me. No wagers with Dennis when I'm gone.
I won't. Are you going to see Kid Rock while you're up there?
Doesn't he live up there? Is Kid Rock going to be up there?
Yeah, doesn't he live up there? No.
Where did I read that Kid Rock? He's running for Senate.
He'll win too, just because he's got a name.
Oh my God, Kid
Rock!
We're
eventually going to be run by all the movie stars and all the celebrities.
Oh jeez. On that note, Spencer, let's wrap up.
So, like I said, very trader heavy next week. Scott Redler, who Lauren mentioned, is on this show on Monday. We've got Greg Harmon joining us. Nick Jaheen, of course. Fari Hamzi. It's been a while since we've had Fari on the show. Fari will be on the show on Friday. So, a pretty trader heavy slate of guests next week. So it'll be a good one. going with Just Dennis and myself at the helm. Hoping toward our show today, I do want to mention real quick that I brought it up on at the end of Lauren's interview, but we are having an event in September. It's called the Benzinga FinTech Summit. It is in San Francisco, Thursday, September 28th. Is when the event is. You go to bzsummit.com. It's a conference focused on AI and quant trading and lending and just general fintech, the whole fintech area. So if you're interested in that, check out bzsummit.com. And as far as listening to our cast, you know you can do that on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher, and subscribe to Benzinga TV on YouTube to get notifications when our show goes live every day. Have a good rest of your day, everyone. Good luck out there. Have a good weekend, and we will be back with you all on Monday morning.